The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler with you here on this Thursday, April the 20th, a historic day in a lot of ways, including something happened in the early morning hours, very David and Goliath-y that we talked about in the top of the six, and that was the defeat of a bill called 1230. The numbers mean nothing to me. I get people text me all the time and say, why aren't you talking about it? The numbers are irrelevant. Use words. Tell me what the bill is, and I'll tell you. The bill this morning that got defeated in committee was the bill that would have outlawed quote-unquote assault weapons in the state of Colorado. We'd have been only the fifth state in America to do that. The others are all the super conservative states you can name: California, New York, Illinois, and Maryland. And the testimony went on and on and on and on for, I think somebody told me, 15 hours. One of the people that participated in that is our next guest. She's a VIP in her own right, but on this particular thing, she's an eyewitness to something kind of unexpected. It's Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the GOP. How are you?
Good morning. I'm a little tired, but I'm happy. Thank you.
I am disappointed you're not in studio. That's not your fault. I'm just saying I much rather be able to look at you and have a conversation than just talk with you over the phone while you're recovering from this thing that took place. Now, you say you're tired. Tell folks why.
Because I waited 12 hours to testify last night, and but it was really important for me to give my voice to this issue of gun ownership.
When you talk about waiting for 12 hours, what time did you get there to the... And by the way, when we signed off on Tuesday, Rose Puglisi, the assistant minority leader, had said, hey, there's 300 people signed up. I think that thing grew. The last thing I saw, it was an estimate, was on social media, was about 450. Does that feel right to you?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit higher. I think it ended up being a little bit higher than that by when it was all said and done. But yeah, that's really around 500. Yeah. I jumped on at 9:30. I signed up to testify online because, you know, I'm at school and right. I have breaks during the day, and I thought, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then after school, I drove down to the Capitol hoping I would, you know, be able to speak in person, and it just kept going and going, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to speak. So I got in the car and turned the Zoom back on and waited in line again, and at 9:30 I was able to testify.
When I saw some of the estimates here, it was 6-1, 5-1 opposed to the bill. Did that seem right to you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the chair, who, by the way, I felt ran that meeting very inequitably and unfairly.
Ooh, I mean, who's the chair? Is this the judiciary? Was this Wiseman?
Yes, yes. I watched him all day allow people who supported the bill to talk longer, go past the two-minute buzzer, and he was very, very compassionate
2 minutes.
With them. Yes, that's all we got was 2 minutes. But then when someone was opposed to the bill, he would cut them off. Thank you. Time is up. Just like very cold. It was so biased. And I want to say at the very end of the night, there was a little boy who made a comment. He was up there with his mom, and his mom was held at gunpoint, and she was against the gun bill.
Wow.
The chair said to that little boy, you know, you're really brave for coming up here. I'm paraphrasing, but I have a friend who was held at gunpoint, too, and he didn't go out and buy a gun. And I thought, that was not a cool thing to say. It was so disrespectful and insensitive and uncompassionate and uncaring for an adult who's a politician to make that kind of comment to a little boy whose mother was held at gunpoint.
And a best guess here, and not that it's hugely relevant, I think he's a childless liberal legislator, too. So I don't know that he has the ability to relate or not to what's going on there. But that little boy was in the Capitol in the early morning hours of today?
No, at night, late at night. It must have been, he must have testified at 10 o'clock. I can't, wow. I can't remember, but it was late. It was late in the evening. He waited all day with his mom.
It really can't shock you, though, too much that the lefties in charge there treat people differently based on what they're testifying for. Now, that is less common. I've seen Weissman run the show a couple times. I haven't seen that a ton, but that doesn't shock me at all, given the fact that they were sitting there looking at a sea of human beings who were like, this bill sucks, you should kill it.
Well, here's what happened, George. Because there weren't a lot of people who signed up in support of the bill, he kept asking the audience, is there anyone here who wants to testify for? And towards the end, there were people who did not sign up to testify for, who just came up. I think there must have been calling and texting during the day saying, y'all need to get up to the Capitol because we're being overrun by freedom-loving, constitutional understanding and supporting people in this room testifying against this racist, unconstitutional bill. And so people just started showing up who didn't even testify because they needed to make it appear as though there were more people supporting the bill than there actually were.
Now, this touches upon something that you testified about. Now, did you only get the 2 minutes, by the way, and then it was, please stop talking?
I got 2 minutes.
You touched upon something that we don't hear a lot with this bill, this racist bill. Why do you call it that?
I call it that because constitutionally, or I should say historically, every anti-gun ownership law was to stop black people from owning guns. And it started before the Civil War ended. There were slave codes that prohibited slaves from owning guns even after the Emancipation Proclamation and the 13th Amendment. The government prohibited black gun ownership. Now, fast forward towards the end of the 1800s, while black people were starting to become citizens, states passed laws called the Saturday Night Special, permitting only the purchase of expensive military-grade firearms that were given to white people. They denied it to black people who could afford it.
Interesting.
And then when you have the 1900s, except for police officers, sheriffs, and many of whom were members of the KKK, which was started by the Democrat Party.
Right.
That 1911 Sullivan Law required prospective gun owners to obtain a permit from the local police, effectively giving officers the final say in who owned a gun and who didn't. And I can go on and on and on about like the Mississippi and Louisiana statutes of 1865 and all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, you look at the most recent story of Martin Luther King, whose house was bombed. The next day he went to go get a gun permit and he was denied simply because he was black. And so these laws, when you look at the language of House Bill 1230 and some of the language of these old racist gun ownership laws, they're duplicates. The language, I went back and forth and read the
really?
Story. I'm like, wow. Yeah, because why should I have to go and be get permission by my sheriff, who, by the way, is amazing and testified against this bill, to be allowed to be a special category in order to own certain guns? That should never be.
This is interesting to me. The other folks that you sat and listened to testify, first off, there's no chance that 450 people online and in person could fit into one room. What'd they do with you? And were you able to hear other testimony? And what were other people saying?
Absolutely. So there was some rotating in and out as people testified in and out. But most people were talking about our rights. And it's not, quote unquote, the Second Amendment, right? It's our right to bear arms. The Second Amendment only tends what the right is. So when we look at the Bill of Rights, we see all of these things like the right to free speech, the right to vote, the right to marry, right? All of these rights are inalienable. They're not up for debate. They're not up for question. You can't just say, well, it's a bad, you know, rule or bad law, therefore we can just ignore it, which is what a lot of Democrat politicians were saying and what a lot of people who were in support of this gun bill saying, is, you know, it's time for us to be compassionate. Well, honestly, as a teacher, this bill, if it were passed, would not make me safe or my students safe. It wouldn't protect us. It would do nothing to fix the problem of mass shootings. And so that's part of my issue when we see these laws come forward. And Representative Epps said, you know what, basically promises made, promises kept. When I was campaigning, I said I would bring this kind of bill forward. Well, why would you bring an unconstitutional bill, a racist bill, to the people and then not really fix a problem? That's kabuki theater is what it is. It's not fixing anything. And so I would argue that now let's get to policy. If we want to help keep our kids safe and our teachers safe, then let's have some serious bills that we can actually debate.
What would a serious bill that we could debate look like?
I would say, you know, I was arguing if it's good enough for legislators to have a fortified building, then why don't we fortify our schools? Why don't we harden our schools? If you really think that it works for you, which I don't know the last time a shooter came into the Capitol and killed a bunch of people. So clearly that works. If we want to keep people safe, then if it's good enough for the goose, it's good enough for the gander. Let's do that. That would be one way that I would.
We're talking with Priscilla Rahn, vice chair of the state party, who spent 12 hours waiting to testify yesterday on a bill that ultimately got PI'd, that got tabled forever. And this was the claimed assault weapons ban. When you look at the other four bills, Priscilla, that are limitations on the Second Amendment that passed and looks like they're going to be signed into law, why were those successful where this one failed? And my guess is 450 people didn't show up to testify against those. I'm interested to know what your thoughts are on it. And is that a reflection of the fact that maybe that's evidence then that those four bills were just more tolerated, that, that the majority of Coloradans wanted those kinds of bills to be passed, but they couldn't stomach an entire ban of a type of weapon?
You know, I think that's a great question, and I wasn't able to testify on those other bills, and not having them in front of me, I couldn't honestly give you the details. But there is something to be said about we the people showing up and giving arguments for or against a certain law. And yes, when you see people come in force and make really clear arguments that cannot be debated or that are supported by other laws, like constitutional rulings. I mean, that's what I heard a lot of too. This bill in other states were shot down. Okay, well, sorry, figuratively speaking.
No, I get what you're saying. No pun intended.
So I'm sorry, I don't know the other three bills clearly.
Oh, here are the ones. It was the 3-day waiting period, elevating the age to purchase weapons to age 21. There's the expanding the red flag law so that you, Priscilla, you're covered now by the new red flag law. You can actually go and seek some sort of extreme risk protection order against your students. And honestly, I need to look at the bill again. I don't think there's any limitation on if you can seek it against anybody. So congratulations. And then the other one is being able to sue the gun makers out of existence.
Oh, yeah. I think the 3-day waiting period, people would probably justify that as, I think people think that's a soft law change in general. Like, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's not taking necessarily your constitutional rights away. Just delaying that. I've had that argument with people about, since when does the government have the right to tell me what I can privately purchase? Like, the government doesn't. But again, that could probably be sent to court as well to say why, you know, like all of these laws, unless there's enough support and enough lobbying to the Democrats, they're going to push through whatever they want to push through. And they made that clear. They don't care about the Constitution. That's become more and more obvious every time I hear them talk. These 3-day waiting periods are changing the age in which it does nothing.
No, I know. It does nothing.
The problem.
That's why they don't have any relevant data. They have nothing from Colorado. I think the 3-day waiting period, they miscited a research paper from, I think it was 2017, out of California, and they completely miscite what it stands for. And that's it. Like, they don't have any other data. The other part that gets me, and I continue to hear this, I see some texts on this too. I think people who are well-intentioned, but they're just not Second Amendment people, ask the question, why does anybody need to own an AR-15? And for me, the question is flawed from the outset because we don't do that with any other right in the Bill of Rights. Nobody says, why do you need to say that? Why do you need to have a National Enquirer? Why do you need to be able to publish anything you want, you know, with very little limitations on social media? Why do you need to keep the government out of your house other than for probable cause and a warrant? Nobody ever asks those questions. They just say, oh, it's a right. So therefore, that's what it is. But with the Second Amendment, all the time you hear, well, why do you need that? It's like, it doesn't matter if I need it. It just matters if I have a right to possess it.
Yeah. I mean, let's go back to the basics. The role of the government is to protect individual rights, period. End of story. That is their role. That is their job. And they've forgotten that. And these people who are who've taken the pledge to defend and uphold the Constitution need to wake up every morning, put that on their mirror and read it. My job is to defend and protect individual rights. And what are those rights? Well, go to the Bill of Rights. Go to the Bill of Rights. It's not that much to read, and study it and learn it. And any time a bill comes before them, they should say, oh, sorry, that's not part of our job. That's not our role. We don't have a constitutional right to take that right, especially when it's clear. It's the Second Amendment's the one that says shall not be infringed. That's a period. That's an exclamation point,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Billy's pointing out that it also says well-regulated in there in the front part.
Oh, they don't like the word militia. That the word militia scares them, a well-trained militia. Come on, people, learn your history. Go, like they say, we as Republicans don't want to talk about history. I am so happy to talk about the history of America and what the read the Federalist Papers so you can understand the intent behind all of the constitutional amendments. I mean, this is really, really critical. But we have people running for public office on a power trip on their own personal agenda, and I heard it myself. It was about them for themselves, not about we the people. Your job as a representative is to represent the people and hear the voices. And I want to hear words like we, our community, us. I don't want to hear I. I want to do this. Okay? That it's backwards.
Priscilla Ron, vice chair for the party. Can I ask too, is this something that is just a one and done for us? Because there are other texters that are texting to say, whoa, 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 we still have to figure out a way to defeat this government sponsored injection site bill. Do you see us mustering the same kind of enthusiasm to end that dumpster fire of policy? Or is this just like, we kind of shot our wad, which is, by the way, a firearm term. We shot our wad with this one.
This is encouraging, and I need everybody to, we've seen the power of we the people. It's effective, and we've got to go and do this with every single bill that's a bad bill. And so I'm encouraged. I think we can do it. It's going to take some organization, but yeah, let's go do it. Why should we help keep people addicted to drugs? How's that compassionate?
I just can't. I agree, but I don't see 450 people showing up. I just don't see it. There just isn't the same enthusiasm to do it.
Well, you might have an argument there. You might have a point there, but that doesn't mean...
I don't want to have that argument, by the way. I want to be wrong. I want 450 people to show up to encourage the lefties to not do this thing. I just, in my mind, and based on just history, I'm like, these are the kinds of bills. This and some of the pro-life stuff get huge turnouts, but then everything else we complain about, and rightfully so, but we just don't show up the same way.
You're right, and I think... your voice is very impactful and influential. And I think if you were to say, this is important, let's get all of the people who've lost loved ones to drug addiction and there's different organizations that we can get behind to help, you know, clean up our city. Got a new mayor coming in several weeks. Let's clean up Colorado.
Oh, man, I hope you're right. Last question, Priscilla, before we cut you loose to go back to the education game. Where you're going to be able to get an extreme risk protection order against your kids. And I know you're thrilled about that. Why did this fail? I mean, we had the 450, but they have a supermajority. They being the lefties have a supermajority under the Gold Dome. They could have just sat and taken all this testimony and said, thanks for nothing. And we're going to vote, you know, 4 or 8 to 4 to pass this thing on. Why did it fail? How much of this involved things beyond just the testimony, like Polis getting cold feet or some of these Democrat legislators worried about reelection issues? Did any of that come into play in your estimation?
Well, I think my guesstimation would be that the Democrats knew from the get-go that it was an unconstitutional overreach, and they knew that, I guess, consulting with the attorneys at the Capitol, that this was going to be a big, big issue legally. Would it pass? And when they got all the testimony, I think the arguments were very, very clear, and the assertion that there will be a lawsuit. I mean, we're not going to sit back and tolerate the federal government or the state government taking away our rights and taking us down this hole where, we're going back in time. And so she just, Representative Epps didn't have the support even going in to the hearing yesterday. She knew it. She started her speech saying, there's going to be some amendments coming. I think she hoped that something in some form would pass. But it was a terrible, there's no bill, there's no language that she could have proposed that would have been constitutional. So I think some of our smart Democrats knew that it was not going to be.
That's interesting too, and maybe a huge distraction from what they're trying to do. I mean, they pretty much just vomited up a day that they have left to put this thing down so that they can move back on to screwing up some other things. The one thing that you said, though, that when she tried to pare it down to bump stocks and the rapid fire trigger thing, I am no David Koppel on this, but I don't know yet that a court has somewhere, and someone will tell me on the text, that a court has ruled those kinds of limitations have yet been unconstitutional on the Second Amendment. And she tried to get it there. And even then, her own party was like, no, we're going to kill this thing and come back next year with something else because this is a non-starter for us. I just thought it was super interesting, and I can't imagine it was just those three Dems. In my mind, I got to believe like what you said is true, and that is Polis is in the background thinking, please, please don't put this on my desk. Please don't make me sign this. I signed your others. Please don't make me sign this. Please don't make me veto this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably some insider baseball, probably so, you know. But I'm proud of everybody who showed up. I was so proud to be in a room and listen to the testimony of freedom-loving Americans who understand their rights. And, you know, these are my brothers and sisters. These are the people that I hold on to and are working and living side by side in this state. I want us to come back to the way Colorado used to be, where we were proud to live here, where it was safe. And we're going to get there. We're going to slowly get there. And I have hope based on last night's outcome or this morning's outcome. I have a lot of hope.
Well, listen, you have the right to be proud along with those other 450 plus folks that let their voices be heard, because it seems like it clearly had an impact here and derailed maybe, and I wouldn't call it flagship bill from their point of view, but from the point of view of conservatives, this was probably the biggest grab towards the Second Amendment that we've seen so far. And it looks like it's gone the way of the dodo in part because of you and the others. So thank you, Priscilla, for the good fight.
Well, thank you, and thank you for putting a spotlight on this bill.
I think it was a huge victory. I just don't think it's going to get the same attention. Had it passed, Priscilla, it would be the front page of both papers, you know what I mean? It'd be the lead story. But when it dies, it's just not. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, and by the way, they also killed the assault weapons ban anyway, and then they go right back to government-sponsored injection site. Priscilla, Ron, we're going to have to get you back in studio here very, very soon.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day.
See you, sister. Hey, that's Priscilla Ron, vice chair of the party. Before I cut you loose, I do want to talk to you about these government-sponsored injection sites. The time bomb is ticking. This thing could actually become a reality. And as you know, Mark Crowley, Pete Boyle, Stephen Tubbs, they all loaded into the Scooby-Doo van and headed up to Van City, Vancouver, a few years ago to expose the nonsense that's their supervised injection sites. Now, Vancouver's overdose deaths, this is British Columbia in total, 60% increase since then. So it obviously did a bang-up job. Now, we're considering doing it. That's House Bill 1202. We've got to nail this thing down into the ground, just like we did with 1230. Reach out to your state senator's office. It's already cleared the House, I think, and tell them to vote against this supervised injection site nonsense. You can go to 710knus.com, click on the Colorado Undivided banner to sign our petition to Governor Polis, asking him to do the right thing and kill this thing. Got to stand for common sense. We have to be a Colorado undivided. Go to 710KNUS.com. When we come back, I'd love for you to give me your opinion. Why did this one fail? Out of the five bills, why did this one fail and the others did not? We've already had some texts on that, too, but I'd love to have the conversation with you. It's so easy to do. 303-696-1971. 303-696-1971. George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS, talking about the defeat of 1230. That is the claimed assault weapons ban bill. That thing got crushed despite its gutting by its lone House sponsor, Representative Elizabeth Epps. Hard to find someone in the legislature more extreme than she is. There's some competing for that title, but she's pretty, pretty ideologically extreme when it comes to the political stuff. She tried to pare that bill down to just bump stocks and rapid trigger fire stuff, which, you know, you would think, OK, that is far different than a straight up assault weapons ban. And it would get more. No, it still died 7-6, three Dems crossing over to vote with the four Republicans on the committee. That is a victory. To talk about why that happened. Why does this happen and why can't we win on the other ones, or at least so far? Brian from Arvada, you're on 710. What do you think, Brian?
George, happy Friday.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the gun bill didn't pass, obviously, because it would have affected so many people in the state immediately. You know, and that's just overall broad. Anytime you want to come for somebody's guns, you're going to have an issue like this. And it was unconstitutional as well. It was going to be tied up in the courts, and they knew that. And then you have Polis, would have been a noose around his neck in the presidential primary that he's going to run in the next year or so. So I think that's why that thing got killed. And I think he wanted it to.
Oh, I think so too. I think he did not like the bill. What do you think, though, about the idea that there have been five of these bills that have targeted the Second Amendment, five of them? The other four don't get nearly the turnout that this one does. And the other four seem poised to become law in the state of Colorado. And they each impact your ability to possess weapons at a certain level, right? Like one is the three-day waiting period. If you're 18, 19, or 20, you're going to be denied the ability to have firearms. So you lose out on that. And then, suing gun makers out of existence. And then the expanded, you know, ERPO law. I mean, why didn't those get the same kind of response?
I think it was a strategy on the Democrats' part. You know, you spray all these bills up there, one that's so radical, you know, the governor isn't going to sign and doesn't want to. Look over here while we're going to pass these other ones that slowly eat away at the Second Amendment. And so that they're smart. These guys are playing chess. The Colorado GOP is playing checkers. And it's always been that way for the last 10 years. They're going to spray everything up there. And then, oh, look at this. And here we are with these other ones now that are eating away. As far as so our Second Amendment rights are going to slowly erode, unfortunately. What we can do is now show up at the Capitol. Good for everybody that did that. I called in my state and representative.
Yeah.
I called Polis's office. I called them all from three different phones, you know, because just told them respectfully and politely, I will not vote for them if they pass any of these bills. If we all did
that. How was that received, by the way, when you called those offices? Was there a human being there? Are you leaving messages or what?
I was leaving messages, and I had to tell myself to be respectful, but I did leave a message for one. The other two, I actually got somebody to answer the phone, and they were nice. They said, okay, we will share that information. And, I just told them, I named the bills and said I will not vote for them if they vote for any of these, and why, because they're a disaster. You know, the injection site, it's going to affect Denver, and they'll probably throw one up in Boulder, just for that. But it's not going to affect anyone here. If they tried to throw one of those in my city, oh, my gosh, it'd be up in arms. We'd have all my neighbors would be down at the city council saying, are you freaking crazy?
And those arms would include semi-automatic weapons now. You'd be up in those kinds of arms. I think you've hit upon something, too, Brian, and the reason why this one got a little more attention. And our friend Janet on the text said so, too, something similar. When I asked the question, why can't we muster this same sort of enthusiasm for safe injection sites, consistent with what you said, it was, well, this law impacts everybody and immediately. The safe injection site, while horrible, doesn't have that same direct connection, right? Like, as you pointed out, Brian, your city isn't going to go for it, but maybe Denver will. And if Denver's the only one that does, it doesn't really impact you. But this bill passing, all of a sudden, boom, instantly you're impacted. Maybe that's it.
It is, and I really do instantly. It's disenfranchising so many people, this gun law. That's why I think everyone's going nuts over it. But, George, once and for all, can we support the new Colorado GOP leadership with our money, with our mouths, with our feet? Can we please support them now? Because we are seeing the result, not having a good turnout, and failing as a party. Can we once and for all support them? And can you have people on your show that are going to support him and not people that are going to say what not to do?
You're talking about Priscilla Ron.
No,
part of the GOP leadership.
Well, yes, but I'm talking about the doubters. I'm talking about we don't need to talk about Trump anymore. We don't need to talk about the election anymore. Who cares? But Brian,
that's not fair and that's not true, right? Because those things continue to surface. The election continues to show up in one way or another. We're still going to talk about the prosecution of Tina Peters. That's legit current events news. It showed up in the form of Dominion and the Fox News lawsuit that got settled for $8 kajillion. And in terms of the Trump thing, dude's running for president. We have to talk about these things if we're going to be a relevant talk radio show, don't you think?
Fox settled with no apologies, and nobody had to go on air and say a darn thing. So that's not going to change anyone's opinion or move the ball. It's going to go away in a week, and the news cycle is going to swallow that up. That's why they settled, because they knew they'd have no culpability publicly if they did.
I'm not sure if that's accurate. I mean, buddy, you and I can speculate. We can also speculate that there was a recording, surreptitious recording, made by a producer, a disgruntled producer from Fox, that was going to highlight some of the other behind-the-scenes stuff, and they didn't want Murdoch testifying. There's a lot of reasons. But remember, the judge found all 20 of these statements that were alleged by Dominion were actually false. There wasn't some sort of debate about are they sort of true or truey. They were determined by the court to be false. But nonetheless, these are relevant issues, and we're going to continue to talk about them. The other thing too, Brian, and you know this, I'm not going to be a cheerleader for just any one person or cause. I want to be the party that has introspection, that can be skeptical of itself, and that can learn from that and be better. Not everybody's on board with that. I get it. But you don't really want us to just be the cheerleader for the GOP no matter what. I don't think I could do that job.
But, George, that's the problem. That skeptical and that critical voice is bigger against our party than it is against these crazy laws that are being passed. Our platform has to be Our platform has to be in Colorado. Look at these laws. Our platform has to be filming homeless people all over the place, taking away our guns.
And Brian, we talk about crappy Democrat laws throughout the entire session and beyond. My God, I just had within the last week, I think Mike Lynch, Rose Puglisi, I think we had on Matt Soper. I mean, we talk about all the garbage bills that are going on in the legislature. I just can't make this show be only positive stuff for the GOP, no matter what the GOP does. I don't believe that. And I don't think you believe that either, Brian.
Well, I don't. And I'm skeptical of the GOP like you wouldn't believe. I'm an unaffiliated. But I'm looking at both sides of the parties, and I'm like, well, Republicans aren't crazy. Democrats are absolutely bonkers. And so that should be our platform, not who's bonkers in Republican Party. How about who's bonkers all over the Democrat Party? And if we run on that, we win a lot more than let's get rid of the crazies in the Republican Party. That's not a winning platform, and it didn't work last cycle. It ain't going to work this cycle. So let's learn from this and say, let's highlight the crazies in the Democrat Party more than anything in our party.
I get what you're saying, Brian.
We have a way better chance of winning.
We have primary fights brewing for all the races that matter, including president. And I just can't sit that out and not. I mean, listen, we could have been stuck with Hank Schwanger as our governor and senator nominees. That would have been a dumpster fire of epic proportions. I mean, we would have lost, in my opinion, by a bigger amount than we did this time, and I can't imagine losing by a bigger amount than we did this time. But that's aside from the fact that in a primary fight, we're going to continue to have candidates on to have these conversations. And Brian, forgive me, man. Thanks for the call. I'm out of time on this segment. But we won this one. But why just this one? And I'm intrigued by what Janet said on the text and Brian said. Maybe it's just because this one is so personal and so immediate and the rest of them aren't. But is that a good enough reason? Was this a one-off? Is this going to be our one big victory? Are we going to be able to take down these government injection sites? I hope we will. But I also think they're not coming to Castle Rock or Parker anytime soon. I don't want them to come there ever. Give us a call, 303-696-1971. When we come back, you, me, all the other good stuff. George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. I hope we have enough time to do that thing that we owe you, the listener, from the 6 o'clock hour that we talked ourselves right out of doing. And that is, if you haven't heard this before, folks, you are in for a treat. Buckle up, pull over to the side of the road, crack the window. It's time for You Choose the News with Billy Thorpe.
Ah, yes. Good morning, sir. No, we don't have our fancy music.
Come on.
I can't figure out how to get it on the other screen.
Let's get Mark involved.
I'm going to have to ask somebody this morning. I tried the several things in my notes, and it didn't work. So, evidently, this was the time that we are today going to play You Choose the News. Yes, it is everybody's favorite fake radio news game show. We have scoured the interwebs to find ridiculous stories, giving them really stupid headlines to play this fake radio news game because most of the time, the people in charge of the station aren't up when we do this, so they don't know what we're doing at the time. So here's what we've got for you today, sir. Here are your four choices. Headline number one, sharing isn't caring. Headline number two, fighting the culture war or taking advantage of the rubes. Headline number three, I guess it's not about the children. And headline number four, trans athletes explained. Choose carefully.
You have really nice rubes.
Alrighty. This is fighting the culture war or taking advantage of the rubes. Now, we talked about this last week. The backlash over Budweiser taking a trans individual and putting them on cans and having them go out there and do some advertising. In the wake of this backlash, conservative Georgian Seth Weathers decided to start a business that would allow those outraged to boycott the beer brand and drink a 100% woke-free beer. Less than 24 hours after launching his conservative dad's ultra-right beer, Weathers, the former director of Donald Trump's 2016 Georgia campaign, says the response has been insanity. He said there are already thousands of pre-orders for his product. Now, the 38-year-old former political consultant already sells products targeted at conservative clientele like Let's Go brand and merchandise and the like. He created the ultra-right beer to give you another alternative to a company to buy from rather than a company that opposes what you believe. Now, is he fighting the culture war or is he just taking advantage of the rubes? Because, well, at the time, ultra-right beer can only be sold online, not in stores, because he does not have a distributor lined up. So you have to order it online. How much would you pay for a six-pack of ultra-right beer, Mr. Brockler?
I guess it depends. Is it high in protein or lead?
It has less alcohol than Bud Light by volume.
Hold on. Nothing has less alcohol than Bud Light. Not even water out of Detroit.
It has less alcohol content. How much would you pay for a six-pack of Ultra Right beer?
I guess not that much then if it has less. $5.
Higher.
Well, $10 then.
Higher.
$12.
Higher.
Do I have a coupon? $15 at most,
higher.
But it has to vibrate. Well, what is it? How much is it?
You can buy a six-pack for $19.99.
What?
Plus shipping. Plus shipping. So again, if you want to make a statement, you get to buy a six-pack of ultra-right beer that will cost you four times the amount a six-pack of Bud Light takes. So again, you can be fighting the culture war, or are you taking advantage of the rubes? I'm just saying, if you get a bunch of people to pay four times the amount of Bud Light it costs just to say they're drinking ultra-right beer, you might want to rethink your life choices, because I'm certain there are other choices inside of the liquor store, at least I've heard, that you can bring home with you.
Coupons.
So I'm just, okay. Your second choice this morning, sharing isn't caring, I guess it's not about the children, or trans athlete explained.
Trans athlete explain, please.
Trans athletes explain. See, this was a bold gambit that happened recently at a chess tournament in Kenya. We've often asked, why do we see a lot of trans athletes, the men transitioning to women, then competing in women's sports? Well, this might answer that question. A 25-year-old Kenyan chess player disguised himself recently as a woman to compete in his country's female open chess tournament. Stanley Odomonde had registered himself as Millicent Awar. But Odomonde's daring move was exposed as the organizers got suspicious by this unknown player's sudden success. Now, the Chess Kenya board president said while he was likely to get a ban for Odomonde for several years, he wouldn't be excluded from chess forever. But the issue was that, first of all, he was just wearing a normal hijab. You know, he was clothed head to tail. Not that unusual in a Kenyan chess tournament. However, suspicion started arising when he started winning against very strong players and also not speaking at all.
Huh?
Well, the deep voice would probably give him away that he's not a woman. So he didn't talk at all to anybody. They also noticed that, wait a minute, when he came to collect tags and other stuff and get his next assignments, he wouldn't even talk to people that were officials at the tournament. And then they noticed that, well, he seemed to be wearing shoes that guys wear, not things that girls wear.
What?
Ever. So,
shoes?
Yeah, so there was...
There's shoes?
Well, I'm just saying that if you show up... You probably, if you're not wearing like, you know, some, you know, low slung, you know, the type of shoes or things like that, or if you show up wearing, you know, Michael Jordan high tops, you might show off a little bit. So this year, over 400 players from 22 countries registered, and 99 of them were in the women's category. The winner would take home $3,000. When confronted, Odomonde said he thought his chances were going to be better playing against the women. That's why I did it.
That's a shocking revelation. Oh, my goodness.
I'm very shocked.
Buddy, are we going to be able to get through this last one?
Well, let's see. Sharing isn't caring.
Sharing isn't caring. Do it.
All right. Sharing isn't caring. Washington State has a woman who's been diagnosed with tuberculosis and has refused a number of orders to isolate. Well, recently, she decided that what she needed is everybody should get the wonderful disease. She boarded a bus to a casino and then was arrested when she was in the casino, but she'd been there for a few hours. So then she's been ordered to be ceased and then treated for the illness against her will because, tuberculosis once killed millions of people worldwide, but declined to about 7,900 cases in the United States in 2021. So we still have over 7,000 cases of this disease. But she decided, I know I is sick. How about I go share this wonderful disease with everybody? Because, as we all know, sharing is caring. That's the end of it.
Perfect job. Nice work. Listen, when we come back, of course, we're willing to continue the conversation here about the defeat of this giant assault weapons ban bill. But I'm also happy to talk about some other news of the day, some things that happened with Bragg, Jim Jordan, a topic we love chatting about. I hope you do, too. George Brock with George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.